Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Okay. Wow. What a day. Today is kind of heavy on me. Tomorrow is my mother's birthday.
Oh.
Yeah, and she passed in April.
Wow.
And so this will be the first birthday without her. She'd been 92.
Wow. Oh, what a wonderful, rich life.
I know. But Dr. Claire, I tell you, her presence and her spirit and her energy is with me tenfold.
Yes.
The other day I was in my office, and I kid you not, I actually felt her just envelop me and let me know that it was all right.
Yes. Oh, I believe they're around us. I sure do.
Oh, yes. Just because they're not in the physical has nothing to do with the metaphysical and the spiritual.
My GCW, I call them my God squad, the great cloud of witnesses. And I call on them all the time. I was talking to him this morning. I said, I'm going to be with April.
I did. And Brains, you are with us here too on the edge, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. We are with Dr. Claire Beatenhorn today. We're going to talk about some things that people don't talk about that they should talk about. Some people that they should care about, but probably don't care enough about. Yeah. And also grief recovery. Dr. Claire is amazing with the work that she does. She has done so many things. She's been a clergy. She has a book series, a 3-book series. It's companion workbooks, heart to heart. We're going to talk about that. She's also going to talk to us about the importance and the significance of being an organ donor. Oh, yes. Folks say, especially in the Black community, I'm not giving nothing. The good Lord, give it to me. I'm going to take it with me when I die. But we're going to share with you the benefits of saving someone's life and really what that takes and the thought process that you need to go through, because it's a serious commitment, And also, how about some support for the caregivers in these assisted living programs? These people are struggling. The struggle is real. They've got to deal with this, they've got to deal with that, they've got to deal with the patients and then go home and deal with life. And who was really giving them the support and the encouragement? You give it to the nurses, you give it to the doctor. What about the person that cleans the rooms?
Mm-hmm.
What about the person that prepares the medication, prepares the food, changes those bedpans and changes the sheets? Want to send them some love too. Dr. Claire is going to envelop us in all of that. We started with the prayer, and I tell you, I'm on fire now. I'm ready to go. So tell my brains, Dr. Claire, where it all began for you. How did the Lord seek you out?
Well, I was, I'm a second career minister, but I've always been interested. When I was 3 years old, I almost drowned. And I remember the last moment before I lost consciousness. And the next thing I remember is the light coming through the towel as my mom held me on her shoulder. And I remember her talking through the fence to the lifeguard. And the thing is, I can't say I remember anything from that experience, but I've always believed in God. I've always known that there was a larger presence around me, and I've leaned on that my whole life. So my husband, my dearly departed husband, he's my, oh man, we were yoked, sometimes he carried the load, sometimes I did, but he died in 2018. And he went in for alcohol recovery in 1989. And as a result of that, he responded to a call to ministry. And then he kept talking to me about it, and I was like, girls don't do that. No, that's a lot of trouble, you know. And then finally, one of the little old ladies at the church got me in the headlock and said, when are you going to see what everybody else sees? You've been called to. So I started my journey. I get tickled with people on Facebook will say, you know, I'm 50 years old and, you know, I just don't know if I ought to, is it worth it? I didn't get my doctorate till I was in my 60s.
Really?
Yeah. And I went back to school to seminary in my late 40s. So I bring it on, man. I mean, let's use our brains. Most importantly, let's get the training we need to provide what God needs us to do with the gifts we're given.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we are given so many gifts and things that we don't recognize, things that have really just not come to surface or we haven't paid attention to. Because God is talking to us, whoever your God is.
Or how many times do we discount something that we go, well, I wonder, that's a little woo-woo. And then,
when folks bless you out, let's talk about that too, Dr. Claire. You know, they'll say, oh, God bless you. And the Lord is this and the Lord is that. They try to whip you with the Bible. That's not what it's about. That's not what it's for. That's not the purpose.
That's not the God I serve.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's how you receive it. Especially in this online environment, everything can be misconstrued. The messages can be discombobulated. There's no sincerity of the heart anymore. Yeah. People could usually have an open, honest conversation. Now everything is so tender and so delicate. You can't say this. You can't say that. Well, I'm going to say it. And you know, what is my favorite quote? I'd rather ask for forgiveness than to beg for permission.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you something funny. I was in a meeting earlier today and I was telling them about how in New Orleans, where I've lived for a long time on the weather, they have humidity reports and they'll say, okay, it's kind of like a frizz report, like, you know, what your hair is going to do for the day.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So, you know, and I said, made a crack. I said, yeah, if I were in New Orleans, I'd have a fro right now. And then, but it was funny. There was like this odd moment of, awkward, like, oh, did she cross the line? And that's what I really miss is our diversity and the way we can welcome each other wherever.
You know, tell a joke, because some things are funny. You know, you got to laugh to keep from crying. So that's what you're doing. You are really going heart to heart with individuals. How did you come up with this book series?
I was working on I was an industrial chaplain while I served churches in Mississippi. Then I entered into full-time chaplaincy and got the training to become board certified chaplain. Well, didn't take me long to figure out that those letters behind your name on your name tag at the hospital were important. So I wanted to get my doctor of ministry in spiritual direction. And I just noticed that so many times patients are caught between life and death. The family doesn't want to give up. The patient isn't going to survive. So many times the patient's families turn to the nurses and say, yeah, what would you do? Well, so as part of this, to fulfill my requirements, I thought, wait, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I was reading a book about the Quakers and the way they discern difficult situations. And they talked about the theology of the heart. And wow, that just jumped off the page to me. I said, that's what I do. That's what I do. And so the title of the book came from that.
Tell me a little bit about the Quakers. I don't know a lot about that.
You know, they are a religious organization or a faith, and they have been around for like 400 years. What's really incredible to me about the Quakers is that they believe in that God is within each of us. God's not out there, not God's not up in the heavens with an old man with a beard. Each of us carry a spark of divinity within us. So that if that is true, if that's our premise, then when we deal with God, with each other, we're really dealing with the God in each other. And so everyday life becomes holy. Mm. And it is very diverse, very just welcome, opening people. And many of them are conscientious observers. Is that the term I want? You know,
let me try to get an education here. Or like, I don't like to lump people together, but just so that I can have a visual. Sure. Are Quakers kind of like the Amish also?
No, they're really, that's one thing. The thing about the Quakers is kind of hard. Their beliefs are so broad that they're sort of hard to pin down.
Okay.
But that's also the beauty, because that since they are so diverse, they're so welcoming to in general and to many faiths.
Well, and so that's important.
And it really, and using them as a model was perfect in the healthcare center, in the healthcare situation, because you're in healthcare, you're dealing with all kinds of people, not necessarily somebody like you or me. And by that, I mean, if you've been raised in the faith, you know, the language, you know, mm-hmm. you talk about grace, you know what you're,
you know? Right. Discernment. Yeah, I get it. You know, you got all the big $25 buzzwords that are going to get you in heaven. Okay, when you knock three times, you got to say these special words. But that's good. That's good. So now let's talk about the caregivers in these facilities. They are really, really overlooked and underserved.
Definitely.
They're not getting the pay, I'm sure. They're working long hours, and the family gives them hell.
Well, yes. And then the other thing is, in the long-term care facilities, not only are the nurses dealing with the patients, they come to know and love the families.
They do. And they become the patient's confidant.
Yes, yes.
During these grieving times, they may tell the nurse something that they've never told their wife or their children, because they want to leave that here on earth as they transition. So there's a lot that they're putting themselves through. So thank you so much for focusing on the nurses. And, you know, doctors, I love you too, but nurses are my sheroes, male or female, because you administer the medicine, you listen to the moans and groans. You ultimately are responsible for the patient, because the doctor now, I know doctors are texting you your orders. They're not even really coming in to the facility as much. You're putting yourself in harm's way, and you are mandated now here to get the COVID vaccine or you lose your job.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's real important to acknowledge we have the registered nurses and we have the LPNs who are nurses as well. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times they're the ones who do the grunt work. And I think it's really important to honor and acknowledge them, as well as environmental services. You know, in a hospital, nothing happens till the room is clean.
Nothing.
And they are on the front line too.
And they're inhaling. I know I was at the hospital with my mom, and mm-hmm. before they could put her in a room, you know, that it was COVID, they had to clean the room. Yeah. And just the smell of the chemicals that they had to use to disinfect that bleach all the time, each room, all day long. You know, that's got a wear and tear on your, you know, on your lungs. They had to wear these little respirators and all this kind of stuff. But there is great work on the other side of that too, because they are special people. They're angels. You know, it takes a special kind of person to deal with somebody that's sick.
Well, and two, you are, as a healthcare worker, with, you know, a nurse, you know, those environmental services folks, they're in the room every day. They do a lot of talking and listening too.
I know they do.
And people will open up to them, and they hear a lot of people's secrets and stuff too. They don't get enough attention.
We want to love on you guys right now. Let's give them a big old hug, Dr. Claire. Ooh, wait. Giving that all out to you. And also to the home care assistant.
Oh, that's, listen, oh, my, I have such respect. So my husband died, like I said, and 3 years ago after a long battle with a weird cancer. And at the end, we had home health. And I was a hospice chaplain for a while. There's something about going into people's homes, seeing them in their own context. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you, if you're in a hospital, you have some control over how clean the house is or the room is, or, and it, but to be there,
let me tell you, hospice, shout out to Kaiser Permanente's hospice. Yeah. Baby, they would call me and ask me, did I want something from the store? He said, well, I know you can't get out, April. Do you need me to pick up something on my way to the store? And I was so out of sorts. I couldn't think of something I wanted and the phone would not ring. Hospice is the most beautiful, loving. I met actually the founder of hospice here in San Diego, but it is the most loving, caring, supportive of people that you could ever meet to help you and your family transition to the next hereafter with dignity. My mother was able to die here in our home. I got to lay my chest on her chest and feel her last heartbeats. Dr. Wow. Claire, I got to see her soul separate from her body. Oh, don't get emotional, April. Yeah. I got to have that beautiful experience. She gave me the permission to stay. I gave her the permission to leave. Yeah. And I feel her. I'm bent, but I'm not broken.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But grief recovery is a process. I got a friend that lost 6 people with it. I mean, her husband, her brother, her mother-in-law, her mother, and 2 dear friends within about 18 months.
Yesterday was my
44 years of marriage.
44 years. We met over a cup of coffee at a coffee shop in New Orleans. He walked in. He was a good-looking guy. And I heard a voice in that inside voice that said, if you don't talk to him, you're going to miss out on something good.
Wow.
So well, he was drinking coffee. I ordered coffee and I just looked up here and I said, my, this stuff's strong.
Put that little southern twang on him, the little charm. But, you know, again, grief is so individualized.
Oh, definitely.
And
definitely.
Grief is not just the death of someone or a pet. It could be the loss of a job. It could be a loss of your self-esteem. It could be a loss of your virginity. It could be loss of your soul, your connection with other people. Grief is a process, and people think that it needs to go through each stages. I bob in and out all different times. You know, I never thought I'd have a meltdown in the grocery store. I go to reach for the graham crackers. Mama loved her some graham crackers. I put them in the cart. Nobody else ate graham crackers. And I just started bawling. And my husband goes, what's wrong, baby? And I said, I had to get the graham crackers for mama. And he goes, okay, you push the cart. He gave me something to do. But again, it is going through that process. What do you say to someone that's grieving?
I say, just like you said, it takes time. It's okay. I think too that for me, there's the grief after the death, but you know, when your mom was getting ready to die or with her diagnosis, that begins a whole anticipatory grief period. Mm-hmm. And then this guy, this financial planner guy, my son hooked me up with. I've got great sons. I love my boys. But, this guy works with a lot of widows. And he said, people prepare for retirement, but like these widows were expecting to be spending retirement with their husbands and they're lost. And I think a big thing, a part of grief is not only missing James, because he, like I said, he was a cool dude. And I miss having somebody to talk things over with, and you know, but also he developed dementia at the end because of heart failure from all the treatment. So he was gone for a while. But still, I had to grieve the loss of it was like, who am I without James? I mean, somebody said once, this is going to be weird. It's never been Claire and James. It's always been Claire and James.
Right. I know, peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
You know, peanut butter and jelly. And, you know, I'm that way with me and my husband. I've been married to him 37 years, and I start a sentence and he finishes it.
Yeah.
And what I do, and I'll tell you that right now, I take every opportunity to tell him as many times as I can how much I love him.
Yes.
Every day.
Yes.
Sneak a little kiss.
Yeah.
To hug him, to text him, to let him know that I am with you yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Yes.
And I live in the moment. You know, if I have an argument, I own it. If he has a disagreement, he owns it, because that's a part of the process. But we work it out and we love it out.
Yes.
We share with our kids, you know, our friends. We cherish our time together. That's with your kids. That's with your parents. You know, but everybody doesn't have a functional relationship, Dr. Clear. And we know that too. And it would be very disingenuous to us to only speak to the, you know, to the happy people.
Yeah.
What do you say to the people that are grieving the loss, and they had a tumultuous relationship with a family member?
I think that it's important. Well, one thing about grief, and I decided early on that I was going to embrace my grief, that the only way to fully get through it was to embrace it. Otherwise, there would always be a part of me that was stuck in the past. And that's been a very important part for me. For those who've had difficult relationships, I think that a big part of that is understanding, and some of it's head work as well as heart work. But think about each of us every day. We do the best that we can do. We act on the best, you know, our decisions are based on the information that we've had. Like, I didn't have a real close relationship with my dad, and I regret that. I mean, he made sure I went to college. I mean, thank you, Robert Beeden and Robert Richardson. But I really had to, one day I was around all these happy fathers with adult daughters, and I just said, God, why are you showing me this? This is so painful. And it came to me, my inside voice said, look, your dad didn't do a good job, but I'm your father, and that's, I'm the one you can always count on.
And I say to people that, you know, that have been through challenges, hurt people.
Yeah.
And I used to always, you know, kind of look with a side eye when people would say, well, forgiveness is not for the other person, it's for you. It is really for you.
Yeah.
I had a situation. I had to write it all down, put it on a piece of paper, and throw it in the fire.
And that is a good thing to do.
It was so freeing and so liberating.
Yes.
And you're still going to have to come across some of those people. The family acts such a fool when somebody dies.
Oh, Lord.
You know, they come in your house. They're going to take everything, take the draperies down. If they could get the carpet off the floor, they take that for some things.
Yeah.
You know, they are scrounging over the carcass of what you used to be.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
Yeah.
They don't have insurance to put the family away. You got to go get a GoFundMe. You know, they're not prepared. And I know everybody is not prepared for these things. Sometimes people die suddenly. Young people die too, Brains. So don't think that, oh, well, you know, I got to set my will up for when I'm 65, 75, or 80. Oh, no, they're dying at 15, 16, 20, 25. So
The other thing is too, it's really, and I don't think people understand this, partners, you are, unless you have a written document, you don't have a say. If you're not married, it goes to the, there's a specific list they go down. The next of kin is your adult child. Then it's your parents. You know, parents assume, no, it's the adult. And if you are in a long-term relationship with someone and you're not married, you need a legal document specifying that person as your power of attorney, the person who can make decisions about your health care.
Absolutely. And you know, the LGBT community, that was one of the strongest strongholds that they did not have, was the ability to even go in and say goodbye.
Yes.
Say goodbye to the person that you have shared your entire life with. You got fur babies together. You bought a house, you've traveled, and you can't go in there, or the family will come in and take everything that that individual had, no regard for you. No regard for your union. However you get down is your business.
Yeah.
You know, however you love is your business. But for someone to come in and invade your space is so wrong. So now they have the ability to be married. And that is one thing. Yeah. Also, Brains, make sure that all of your documents are in order. Make sure that you go and look at your beneficiaries. When is the last time you checked who your beneficiaries are? Maybe that person has passed away. Maybe that person's pissed you off and you don't want to leave them nothing. You know, whatever that situation may be, make sure that you have some sort of document. If you own property, that you have all of that taken care of, because you don't want it to go in probate. That's another stress. That's another grief.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It can be, if you have your paperwork in line, it can be maybe not easy, but it's sure a lot easier. One thing though, I have to tell you is funny, because right after I was calling about the life insurance policy, a week or so after, and I called and they asked for my husband's social security number. I was like, boom, 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 boom.
Bless your heart. But when we talk about getting your paperwork in order, let's talk about these organs.
Okay.
Okay. I am an organ donor. Wow, it was a thought process. And I thought about another interview that I did. It was one of my very first video interviews. And my two coworkers were together. One was a more mature woman from the West Indies. And then the other one was a younger woman that was a Filipino and Hispanic culture. So it was Allison and Farrah. Farrah goes into work. Allison, they have become fast friends. She says, Farrah, she says, what's wrong with you? She says, I need a kidney. And Allison said to her, well, I have two. Would you like one?
Oh.
Just like that. Like it was nothing. Come to find out, Farrah had a twin. Do you know that Allison was a better match for that kidney than her own twin sister?
It was something.
But Farrah went through a lot of challenges. It was 8 years, 8 years before they could do the transplant. Wow. And they did it. That's crazy. I learned so much about that. And I was like, you know, these are two polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And look how God brought them together.
Yeah.
Hearts, kidneys, lungs, eyes. They're doing skin transplant now. They're doing all kinds of stuff. Okay, so I get it, you know. But what you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? If you are of a faith and a believer, you have ascended a long time before your body has disintegrated.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your work with organ donations and what's your perspective on that and how you got involved?
Well, when my husband was really declining, we were living in New Orleans and I was a critical care chaplain at a hospital there. And that's where I did my study, my listening study that my book is based on. But when I came up here, I needed a job, and it was so funny because I even flew up for a chaplain job. I live in the Louisville, Kentucky area. And I came up and I didn't get the job. And I was like, this, I'm board certified. I've got all this stuff. I couldn't believe it. Well, I went back down to New Orleans and I said, look, God, I'm happiest when I'm serving you. And the words think outside the box popped in my head. Mm. I got to work at the hospital, walked in, a person from the Louisiana organ donation place was there, happened to be visiting that day. And I was like, think outside the box. Well, while she was there, I went over and Googled organ donation in Kentucky. I'm right across the river. And there'd been this position working with families that had been open a long time. And it was just, oh, April, it was amazing. It just all, it was like hitting that first domino. I got the job. We sold our house in New Orleans. We even were able to find a good doctor, you know, make the transition of care, all that. So I had worked with, as a chaplain, I had worked with organ donation before. And I thought I knew, I thought I had a pretty good idea, but it is a lot more complicated than I realized as far as the technical end of it. But when a person signs up, when they get their driver's license, they are putting themselves on the registry to be an organ donor. And I don't know about other states, but I know where I live, when I got my driver's license, they asked me 3 different times and before it was finalized. And I said, yes. So once that happens, when you, that, once they call that being on the registry. So, and then with that process, usually, you know, it's important to let people know how you feel about it, because that was one of the biggest challenges of my job, because, you know, teenagers when they sign up, or, you know, young adults when they sign up, may have signed up to be on the registry, but never told anybody. And then suddenly these dramatic, awful deaths, and families have everything going on. It's really tough.
It is tough. And, you know, and financially, I have to put that out there, it can offset some of your financial costs as well.
I need to correct you on that.
Okay.
Because that's against the law. That might be, see, if we give any financial help that, for anything, including burial, then that could be construed as affecting somebody's decision or buying, you know, people say,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that would might be able to, you know, I mean, it's not like you're selling body parts, because I'm going to tell you, this is what they don't realize, too, is that these drug, these human traffickers, mm-hmm. they're also trafficking for body parts. Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't think that they're not.
No,
they are. It's been in the news. People don't talk about it as much. They think it's drugs. They think it's labor. They think it's sex, but it's also body parts. So I can see where you can say that. So thank you for making that correction on that. Cause I just thought that they might be able to offset some of the cost of what's happening with that. So when you donate your organ, I hope you take good care of your body. I'm sure that they go through rigorous testing of the liver to make sure there's no cirrhosis there, to make sure that there's the liver, that yeah. there was no bad disease, a HEP 1, 2, 3,
oh, yeah,
A, B, C. They check all of that, and then they keep it on ice. And then they transport it to the other person. Do you know anything about the owner, the donor recipient list?
Well, one thing is, okay, when a person, let me correct what you just said about the donation part. So what happens is once the person's declared dead and they are medically supported and life support, the person is considered dead, brain dead. Officially, there's 2 different doctors, according to how it's done in each state, 2 different doctors declare the person brain dead. And so the body has to stay on life support, or well, it sounds like it's being medically supported because we need the blood to be perfusing the organs. It's in that time, and it takes takes a little while because getting the match is so important that it can take up to a day or so while they are running all the tests. I thought it was just blood type, but no, there's all types of tissue that have to be matched to make the best possible match with the least problem with, when it's rejected. So, but it's funny because I talked to a nurse once at one of the transplant centers in Louisville. She said, I wish everybody could see how the before and the after, when the person who's receiving the organ goes into the OR, so many times they're gray. They're clinging to life. And when they come back, they have color. There's blood pumping through it. It's remarkable.
And how many lives one body could save? Five lives.
Well, actually, for each person, you have two lungs. Those could go to two different people. There's the heart or the heart valves. The liver can be split. Two people can receive a liver, two kidneys. So really up to eight people. And then, so there's organ donation. And then there's tissue and eye donation. That happens once a person's been declared dead, if they don't qualify for an organ donation, maybe their health is too bad, maybe whatever they had, they just aren't able to donate organs. But tissue and eye, over 100 people can be helped with that, because you have the corneas, and then skin, it's just a really light layer. They take it off the back. You can have an open casket. It's very, very delicate surgery. But also, look, I got cadaver bone in my jaw.
Wow.
Somebody donated that. Or you think about back surgery where people say, oh, yeah, well, they use cadaver bone. Well, that cadaver bone came from somebody who donated, a human who donated that. Okay. Or the tendons in your legs, people get knee surgery, get that, was it the ACL or something? Mm-hmm. It's incredible how many people can be helped.
And the simplest thing is donating blood and plasma.
Yeah, that is too. But April, look, over 100, you think of all the people, the last big Super Bowl game, let's say 2020, there were 62,000 people in that stadium. There are over 100,000 people waiting on organs to receive organs. And 20 of those a day die because there is no organ for them. I think it's like one in three of donors are over 50. That's one thing they'll say, oh, these are old. No matter how sick you may think you are, there's somebody sicker.
Wow. Well, you are not sick. You are well in my heart, in my mind, and in my soul. You are heart to heart. Thank you so much, Dr. Claire. This has been such, so powerful and healing. Made me feel good. You just celebrated your anniversary. I'm celebrating Mama's birthday. So, there's a synergy. We were meant to be here together. Mm-hmm. Heart to heart, a synergy under the watchful eye of our God. Thank you so much. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you. I'd love for them to purchase a copy of the book. All of the information is going to be on the backside of this interview. Okay. And look at it. That is gorgeous. Look at that. Is that the cutest thing ever? Here, let me put it next to the postcard. Where's the postcard at? I lost the postcard. We going.
Oh, darn.
Because we got to get a picture here. So look at that. Heart to brains. Loving you deeply and completely. Thank you so much. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you.
My website is yourlisteningpartner.com. All one word, yourlisteningpartner.com. And you can reach me at drclaire@yourlisteningpartner.com.
She's here to listen to you, brains. Speak up here on the edge. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, April. Appreciate it. Thank you.